got you back in my play. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and we are coming to you this week on the precipice of a brand new console launch. And I thought it would be an absolute blast to kind of get some memories from the audience and then share ours as well, of course, of previous console launches, because just some crazy stuff can go down and the ways and means that we go through to pick up this brand new plastic and silicone on day one can just be somewhat extreme. Joining me for this episode is your friend, my friend, Joshua Hillier.
Hello, friends, and I just want to warn everybody about Y2K. It's coming up right after the Dreamcast launch, which we have coming up soon.
Yeah, so make sure you update your SegaNet access and you get the latest version of the Dreamcast web browser before going online.
Mm-hmm. I have a 56K modem, so it should be pretty fast for me.
Okay, I imported the network adapter from Japan via Hardcore Gamer. So I'll
wonderful.
Be good.
Yeah, you're set.
Well, I thought this would be fun to do, and also, like, I'm about to go to Tokyo in a couple days, so it would have been hard to do another episode this week before I head out, because we're recording a couple days before the Nintendo Switch reaches shelves, and we get access to a brand new Legend of Zelda game, and it just, like, dawned on me that we've shared some of these memories in the past on the show, which is also why I wanted to get a lot of feedback from the audience and for them to share their stories. Plus, it is just something I want to do a lot more of in the year 2017, which is just share more stories from the listeners themselves, because judging from these emails, we got some pretty interesting launch day stories and some histories with some launch consoles. And it is like, Josh, this is always, I mean, we're, how old are you? You're in your 30s?
I am. Yeah, I'm pushing 33 now.
Okay, we're in our 30s, but still, we were talking before the show, even though it's not like the most optimal situation for a launch, like, we are really excited. We are literally counting down hours before we get a new Nintendo console. And again, it's mostly because of Zelda. But like, this still pumps us up today. Just imagine, like, if you think about it, go back to what it was like when we were in our teens, when we were 8 years old, 9 years old, waiting for the Super Nintendo to be opened up on Christmas Day. So that's the kind of stuff that we're going to talk about today. Launch consoles, the games that we got with them, the third-party accessories that were absolutely terrible, but we just made our friends use them. We used the stuff that came in the box. And, of course, again, sharing some memories from the audience. But like, I think the best place to start before we get into the emails from the audience is just to talk about, and this is something we discussed a little bit on the Player One podcast last week, and it's something that, you know, CJ, you know, right or wrong, was using to kind of justify like why the Nintendo Switch is kind of a mess, because all console launches are kind of a mess, even though I might disagree with it. Like, Josh, you remember the launch of the Super Nintendo here in the United States? Do you remember getting a console? Maybe it wasn't designed as cool as the Super Famicom iteration of that hardware, but we got a console for $199 with two controllers. We got access to composite video, stereo sound, and five fantastic launch games with F-Zero, Gradius 3, Pilot Wings, SimCity, and of course, the pack in Super Mario World. That is a hell of a launch.
It is. I honestly don't think that one's been bested. Like, I'm going to make a case for N64 when we get to that one in a little while, but it just in terms of like variety of games and value for the price that you're paying, two controllers, that was absolutely killer. And well, Super Mario World was a pack-in, right?
It was absolutely a pack-in. Like, when we, and actually I'll save this for the next segment. Yeah, we'll talk about that. But like, when you can compare it to the Nintendo 64 launch, which had kind of a somewhat of a soft launch over the course of a couple weeks. Like, it launched with Super Mario 64, which is kind of all you needed, and Pilot Wing 64. Then the preceding weeks, we got things like Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey. We got things like Shadows of the Empire. So Turok, Dinosaur Hunter 2. I don't want to forget about Turok. Sorry.
Or the Great Wave Race.
And of course, Wave Race. So yeah, they staggered that stuff out a little bit. But I think, like, if we want to talk about in that time period, the king of video game console launches here, at least in the United States, it is between two consoles. Actually, no, it's probably between three consoles. It's between the Sega Dreamcast, which launched on $9,999 with Aero Wings, Air Force Delta, Blue Stinger, which, you know, for back then was pretty dope. Kart, Flag to Flag Racing, Expendable House of the Dead 2, Perfect Arcade Version, Perfect Arcade Port, Hydro Thunder, Perfect Arcade Port, Monaco Grand Prix, Mortal Kombat Gold, pretty damn good version of Mortal Kombat. That was Mortal Kombat Trilogy. NFL 2K, one of the best sports games of all time. Perfect Arcade Version of NFL Blitz 2000, as long as you got the non-messed up sound version. Pen Triathlon,
What is that? I'm looking at that too. Trilcelon?
No, Pen Triathlon. I know it doesn't look like it's said that way, but that's what it's called. Power Stone, Ready to Rumble Boxing. Again, if, as long as you didn't have messed up audio. Sonic Adventure, Soul Calibur, TNN. Remember the Turner? Was it Turner? It was the National Network. Right.
Yeah.
They used to have my wrestling. Motorsports, Hardcore Heat, Tokyo Extreme Racer, which was a badass racing game. And then Trick Style. Like, that's like the Japan to U.S. charge shot. That was going from Japan launching with Godzilla Generations, Pen Triathlon, and Virtual Fighter 3TB to that.
Well, and they launched it almost a year earlier in Japan, though, which kind of explains how many more titles we received in the U.S. But, you know, I'd rather have a big launch like that. I mean, kind of looking at the Nintendo Switch situation, which we both said we're excited about, it is a soft launch. I love Nintendo to death, but, you know, it seems like you're not allowed to say that, like in certain Nintendo places.
It's a limp launch. Communities.
Yeah, it is. And if they launched in November, it could launch with, you know, 20 titles and Mario Odyssey, and it could be this big of a launch as well.
They should have listened to Wyclef Jean, man. It should have been gone till November. Like, they should
gone
have just,
November.
Yeah, they should have just waited. January, February, March, April, May, make your games, and then release this thing in November. But again, we're getting Zelda, so it's not that big of a deal. Who cares?
That was a pretty sick Wyclef Jean reference, by the way. I think you should be applauded for that.
I'm digging super duper deep tonight. Maybe the other consoles that could step up to that, like in terms of 1999 on, of course, the PlayStation 2 in the United States had a pretty deep lineup as well. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but some pretty interesting games in there, like SSX was in there, Smuggler's Run, which was pretty cool, Ridge Racer 5, Ready to Rumble Boxing 2, Madden NFL 2001, which was a huge leap from what we were playing on the PlayStation 1 and on the Nintendo 64, and even some interesting games, like X-Squad was really cool, Tekken Tag Tournament was really awesome. We had games like Silent Scopes, you were getting your arcade ports as the arcades were starting to die down, and cool racers like Midnight Club Street Racing.
Yeah, yeah. There's a ton of games. I'm just looking at the whole list. I didn't remember it being this big.
Well, here's the...
Time Splitters?
Yeah, here's like the... Well, Time Splitters one's pretty terrible. But it was the start of something great, which is worth tipping your hat to. This is something that I don't really think about a ton, but the GameCube in the United States had a super decent lineup. Like, you had some good third-party stuff from Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, Super Monkey Ball, which was like pretty much a second-party title on that console. You had Star Wars Rogue Squadron 2, which was, of course, you call that second-party, right?
Definitely. Yeah, when Nintendo publishes it or funds it,
right. And then, of course, Luigi's Mansion, which I've never played the GameCube version of Luigi's Mansion, but if it's anything resembling what we got from Next Level on the 3DS, then it must have been pretty dope.
It was. The GameCube controller felt great with that. It had the analog triggers, so you could kind of control how hard you were sucking to bring in the ghost and that sort of thing. Yeah, it was good. And Wave Race as well, once again, the last Wave Race game we ever received.
Yeah, and this is what, like, I started going through some of this stuff because, again, as much as, like, CJ brought this up, is like, yeah, like, consoles don't have good launch lineups. Like, maybe, and I would even debate, like, the PS4 and the Xbox One had decent lineups themselves, but when hold on. When you go back to the original Xbox, you had Halo, one of the best games of the generation, the start of an incredible franchise, the game that I was using tunneling software on GameSpy to be able to play with people across the world. You had Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2X, which is an awesome version of Tony Hawk. I think it's Tony Hawk 1 and 2. And you had PGR. You even had Bill Gates' favorite game, Fusion Frenzy. So that's a pretty decent lineup.
Yeah, I thought you meant the Xbox One, like the more recent Xbox. You mean
yeah,
the
we're still doing that. The original Xbox.
Okay. Yeah, no, that was a good launch lineup.
Even like I thought 360 had a good launch lineup. If you didn't have a PC, you had Call of Duty 2, you had Amp 3, you had Cameo, which is continuing to get an improved legacy as the years go on. Mm-hmm. Perfect Dark Zero was fun online. It was a really good online multiplayer game to have at launch.
Yes. Peter Jackson's King Kong, the official game of the movie. I just like saying that.
1,000 gamer score.
Yeah, easy 1,000 gamer score. I think we all did that one.
And that, Geometry Wars.
Yes. Geometry Wars was sort of the hidden gem. And that was before digital distribution on home consoles was a thing. So that was kind of ahead of the curve.
Yeah, and I think if we're kind of looking in the previous generation, I would even say, and this is, somewhat debatable, but I even thought if we look at the PS4 and we look at the Xbox One, there was a lot of stuff from third parties, but even not the best game, Killzone Shadowfall, nice game to show off the hardware, you know, having things like Battlefield 4, really good version of Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag. And on the Xbox, you had maybe a couple hiccups, but games that underperformed power-wise, but still some, you had Dead Rising 3. You had Crimson Dragon. Killer Instinct ended up being good.
Killer Instinct is pretty solid, yeah.
It is. I guess like the point that I want to make as we go to this, like those are a little bit better than, you know, the Switch lineup, which outside of Zelda, I think is still rather weak. I bet Super Bomberman R is going to be absolutely terrible.
It is going to be terrible.
It's $50. It is. Don't spend your money on that. World of Goo is 14 years old. Snipperclips looks cool. Shovel Knight is always going to be badass. And
that's a new expansion for that game.
Right.
Spectre of Torment.
Correct. And then I Am Setsuna is a game that's been out on other hardware already, including Vita and PlayStation 4, and Fast RMX, which I think you even mentioned, for some reason, people are holding this up as like the heir apparent of F-Zero, which
right.
I don't know what in its limited coverage has shown anyone that this will be a heir apparent to F-Zero, but God bless you, man.
You know, when you go through a really bad breakup, and the next person you date, like you don't stay with them very long, but the next person you date, you're like kind of trying to believe that it's true love, that that person makes you feel the same way that the last person made you feel.
Get a GameCube, get a copy of F-Zero GX, and you know what? Or even go play the Game Boy Advance games. Like those are really interesting. They got cool anime style to them. Do that.
Just go back to your first love. Go back to your first love.
All right, so what I'm saying is, yeah, maybe game console launches aren't as cool as they used to be from a games lineup. And maybe the hardware breaks more often than not these days. But hell, you go and pick up like an original Super Nintendo, that thing probably still works today. Original Game Boy, I bet that thing still works. I got Sega Genesis Model 1, not 1 foot from my keyboard. That thing works.
But that's one thing we haven't mentioned about the Xbox 360 launch so far, which you might be leading up to that right now. I'm not sure.
No, like that is how things progress. As we got to the original PlayStation 1, hardware failures. The Sega Saturn had its issues as well. But PlayStation 2, like I bought a Sega Dreamcast because the guy might have been lying a little bit. He was saying, you know, those PS2s coming in from Japan, they're not really working super well. Those drives are dying. So you're going to want to pick up a Dreamcast because I don't think this PS2 thing is going to work out. I think that guy's still working at what is now GameStop. So, you know.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
He's not able to really predict salesman. The markets.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, these things get more complicated and they continue to come in hotter and hotter as, like, the Switch. I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's not ready for the thing. Maybe it could have used a little bit of extra time in the oven.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and the fact that we keep learning about launch games, you know, like, I mean, last week it was like, yeah, Shovel Knight and Fast RMX are both going to be there on day one, and Snipperclips too.
Yeah, they need it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's pretty clear that the plan was never, at least for Snipperclips, to be day one. Because, I mean, Nintendo knew how development of that game was going, and because it's in-house, they're publishing it. Mm-hmm. And they had just put March earlier for that game. So I don't think that was a surprise announcement so much as it was a, we could use an extra game here. And this is certainly going to be a cool one.
Yeah, speaking of cool ones, here's a really cool video game music track that you can listen to as we transition to the next segment and we go through your memories, the listeners, and we're going to riff off of that stuff with our own memories as well. Man, I still, like I said, 31 years old. I'm still like kid on Christmas. I cannot wait. If from what I've heard from people, Legend of Zelda could be, Breath of the Wild could be like the best Zelda in 20 years. It's impressive. Stick around. We'll be right back. Back through your console launch memories. I asked for some emails via Twitter. It's a great reason why you should follow both Back in My Play and at Kevin Larrabee on Twitter, because sometimes I'm just going to ask for some stuff. I want you guys to participate on the show, and that's how I kind of get the word out. Let's start with this first email from John. I'm going to do my best to read these. It's totally a possibility that there'll be some grammatical errors in here, but I'll do my best to get through it.
We can do every other one. Like, you read one, then I read one.
Oh, I would love that. The next one's super long. So this first one's coming in from John. I asked, what was your favorite console launch and your memories of that launch? John says, mine would have to be the Sega Dreamcast. Had my heart on one for ages with all the marketing, and when October, quote, I'm a UK listener, rolled around, my uncle was visiting. My birthday is in November, so he suggested to my parents that they go in together and get me one. Then, being an absolute hero, he loudly proclaimed that there was no point in me waiting until my birthday, as I knew what I was getting anyways. So I got to skip launch day.
Spend is what that's supposed to say.
Oh, nice. It's good to have someone typo. That's a writer on here. So I got to spend launch day playing the hell out of Sonic Adventure and Dynamite Cop. Such great memories. That's a great 1-2 punch to have with your console on launch is a good multiplayer beat-em-up arcade experience, arcade perfect, Dynamite Cop, and then something to sink your teeth into, like Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I love my favorite part of the story is the uncle saying, he already knows what he's getting, just go on and give it to him anyway. Like, I would have killed to have had an uncle like that, because I always had to wait, even if we got the console on launch day. Yeah. So, I mean, like, this uncle is the best uncle ever, and I hope you're still friends with him.
Yeah, I like, that was the worst. Like, my parents were so rigid on everything. Like, there was no flexibility, like, on anything when it came to video game stuff, not opening stuff early, not even being able to use my own money to buy a copy of Link to the Past.
Couldn't do it. Oh, yeah, I remember that story. What did you have to get instead, like a bike or something?
I had to get a stupid 10-speed Uffy bike. No, you're my parents. You buy me a bike. I want to buy The Legend of Zelda. But like I was talking with Greg about on, I think, on some podcast, or maybe we were just hanging out. You know, my parents got divorced. Then they bought it for me, so that worked out. No, that's what we're doing. We're doing Link's Awakening, and we were discussing that. So, John, Dreamcast was a hell of a launch, as we discussed in the previous segment. I think it potentially is the best launch lineup of all time here, at least in the United States. And
oh, definitely.
I don't know. Sonic Adventure, I never made it all the way through, but at least it was a really good technical showcase of what that console was capable of.
Yeah, well, and people say, okay, that game's not good. By today's standards, but I remember being floored when I saw it for the first time in that big set piece where the killer whale is destroying the seaboard as you're running along. I mean,
I'm telling you, like,
awesome.
But when literally we went to, it was like the first weekend that Best Buy opened in my city, and inside of the new Best Buy, they had an incredible, like, the video game section of Best Buy back then was way cooler. Like, it had a bunch of, TV screens with consoles hooked up, a bunch of kiosks, and, like, it was almost like, not like a tent, but it was like a structure dedicated to the video game section. And seeing the Dreamcast playing Sonic Adventure was, I haven't really played Sega stuff since the Genesis, but I don't know. This looks pretty good, but I'm, of course, going to have to wait until PS2 or GameCube comes out, which I didn't.
When you think about Sonic Adventure, though, so yes, it was very impressive at the time. Do you remember anything about that game other than that part where the whale is destroying the boards over the ocean as you're running?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, I played quite a bit of it in college too, because I went through a super, super obsessive Dreamcast phase, and I ended up, I had so many downloaded games, I guess, and I ended up playing through a bunch of it, because also that was when you could get a VGA cable, and I had an HD TV at the time. I had a 26-inch Olivia 720p TV. Like, if you've ever heard of that brand,
was it a CRT?
No, it was a flat panel. It was the It was. I bought it from, and I forget. I think again, I was talking with Greg about this, but I bought this from TigerDirect.com. That's how sketchy the TV was, but I somehow scrapped together $250, and maybe it was like $300 for this 26 or 27 inch 720p HD TV, so I could play Gears of War on, and it was awesome. I skipped class when that TV arrived.
Yeah. Speaking of launches, that was the Xbox 360's second year, though, right? With Gears, or was that a launch? That was a year later. Title. Okay, yeah, never mind. But one of the most awesome things, though, about the Dreamcast was not only were you getting that new hardware, was the VMU. Like, that was such a different take on a memory card, to put a little screen in there, and there was the Sonic Adventure minigame tied to that. Just that was something that I loved about, and this is lame, that I loved about that launch. But here's my lame story, is that KB Toys, do you remember that place?
Yeah, dude, I was there when they closed the doors.
Oh, bummer. And they quit selling video games before the whole chain went under eventually. Like, that was sort of a sign that things were going bad when they stopped selling games a year before.
That's right.
Yeah. It was a sign of things to come for them as a franchise. But anyway, I pre-ordered there. I got a Dreamcast t-shirt that was like probably an XXL, just humongous. I wear a medium now as an adult even. So that goes to show you just, that was kind of the thing back then, though, was wearing big shirts, you know, in the 90s. Baggy cargo shorts, which you would be able to carry a Switch around in the shorts we're wearing in the 90s.
Dude, I had cargo jean shorts, man.
Jean shorts,
with Velcro pockets. I was all the ladies were asking me to go to the sock hop. I'll tell you that.
My mom let me open my VMU. That was the only thing I was allowed to open for that launch.
Well, that,
like, what do you do with a VMU? What, just a VMU? But she was like, it has a screen on it. You can do something with it.
Yeah, you can change. You can set the date and set the time on it, and you can use it as like a watch, and then the batteries die the next day. So,
yeah, I did have a pretty weak battery.
I still have a closet with 60 sealed VMUs in it.
Wonderful. Do you have like assorted colors and everything?
They're all blue and green.
Okay, the translucent ones. That was another 90s thing, like late 90s, early 2000s thing.
That should come back. Translucent plastic on hardware is effing awesome. I am such a huge proponent of that, and I like how let me say this first because I'll forget that, you know, we talk about Nintendo blowing a launch. Like, it's easier to get like a bump of Coke at your local Target store right now than it is to pre-order a pro controller or to get one on launch day. It's going to be impossible. They are sold out everywhere. And like, to the point where I had to pre-order mine from Amazon Japan, which, looking at it right now, I'm actually going to cancel that pre-order and pick it up while I'm in Japan, because they're still not sold out in Japan. So it looks like it's not like they're like in out of supply there. So I'm not going to pay the extra $10 to have it shipped here. But
yeah,
the Dreamcast launched, and you could not find a VMU you could not find a VMU for months. Months. They were selling this imported Godzilla branded memory card, not VMU, memory card at my local EB Games, and like, you were stuck with buying the stupid, what was it? It probably was a Mad Catz memory card. No, you know what it was? Oh, what was that? It was a performance brand memory card for my Dreamcast, which,
yikes. Like,
you sneeze on that thing, it loses its saved data.
Yikes. Yeah, I got the regular gray one that it launched with, which I think was the only color at the time. But I pre-ordered that and the system at KB Toys for the $99.99 launch, just to hand it over to my mom because she paid for it. And Sonic Adventure. And what was the Hydro Thunder? Hydro Thunder was my other
launch
game. Yeah. I didn't know how good Power Stone was going to be. I ended up getting that like early the next year.
You should really go if you haven't already. And I can't remember. I think Ryan Payton talked about this when I was talking about Shenmue 3 with him. But it's on the Shenmue YouTube channel. Like, it's the channel that they're using for the Slacker backer and for the Kickstarter page. But there's like an hour long video about the development of the original Shenmue. And also there's a bunch of footage in there from the launch of the Dreamcast in Japan, like of people watching videos of Virtua Fighter 3 TB in Akihabara and stuff. Like, that it is super cool. If you want to go like watch a console launch in Japan, like, that's the way to do it. And also I think I was talking with CJ about this or something like that, but like, the first time I ever visually saw John Riccardi was on the 1UP show, like getting a DS in Japan. And we ended up talking about this on A4 or something like that, but like, they just shipped them camcorders from San Francisco to Japan to film a bunch of stuff for the 1UP show. And like, that's the stuff, like those, like, if you can still dig up those episodes of the 1UP show, I think they're on YouTube. Like, just console launches in Japan are so cool.
Yes. I've never gotten to be a part of one, but definitely cooler than it is here. No doubt about it.
I was going to be, but then I was like, no, dude, I need to get a US console. This was before what it looks like, and we're kind of getting off the rails here a little bit, but someone changed the language settings on their Switch, and it changed the language of their copy of Zelda when they did it. So presumably all the languages are on that cart, but
very good.
But it seems you cannot, like, my dream is to be able to play the game with English subtitles and Japanese voice acting, because the voice acting in the Japanese trailer was incredible. It was super good.
Yeah, no, the English voice acting is, it seems like it's going to be serviceable, certainly, not, you know, embarrassing, like English voice acting for Japanese games has been in the past.
But it has, but, like, it, that game looks like it should be in Japanese, right?
You're right. No, it
like,
absolutely
it looks like a studio, like a Studio Ghibli type thing. Like, that was the first mistake I ever made, was watching, I think it was Princess Mononoke. I watched it with the English voice work, and I was like, this isn't doing it for me. But I guess that's the trick. You got to listen to it in Japanese and read the English subtitles. But who knows? Patch that stuff, man. Just patch it in, and I'll give you $5, whatever it takes, so I can play the game I want to play the way I want to play it.
Well, it looks like you're actually going to be lucky just to get a copy, a physical copy of the game at launch. Like, Amazon doesn't have copies anymore, and neither does GameStop.
I got 3 copies pre-ordered just in case. One at Best Buy in case my Best Buy order shows up a day early. I got Amazon, plus I got the $99 special edition, which I'm actually not keeping. I'm selling it to Jason Bento over at YouTube. I just wanted the CD sampler, and I'm going to give him the rest of the stuff.
Very good. Very good.
We're going to be here for 18 hours.
Let me say one more thing about the Dreamcast.
Totally, yeah.
So, like, Limp Bizkit, if you remember them, and I said Bizkit because there's a Z in the spelling of that word. They were really big in 1999, 2000, 2001. That was kind of their absolute heyday.
Yeah, that's when they're starting to collaborate with, you know, mythical rappers like Method Man.
Method Man. Oh, that song. That song's so good. I like the music video, too. It kind of has some, like, kung fu leanings in it.
The Matrix was really popular.
Yes, like everybody was doing the slow-mo, like high jumping and whatnot back then. But they did this big, like, Dreamcast push for one of their entire summer tours, I remember, because I went to that tour because I liked Limp Bizkit that much when I was 16 years old. And, like, there were Dreamcasts you could play at their tour. And Chris Kohler recently posted on Twitter a picture of a Fred Durst autographed Dreamcast that he bought. He said he got it for, like, $12. So I legitimately would like to have that.
No, that's the price about right.
Yeah. I mean, like, Fred Durst is not cool, and neither is Limp Bizkit. Trust me.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to spend...
Just for, like, nostalgic reasons.
Yeah, but you're going to need to spend at least $2 for a magic eraser to erase that thing off the top of it. So that's... $17 for a Dreamcast isn't too bad.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Of course. He doesn't even have a very cool signature either. You know, like some celebrities. Oh, well.
Well, I guarantee we'll get to more Dreamcast stuff. So let's get to... Next email coming in from Anthony.
You want me to read it?
Do it up.
Hey there, Kevin. And I'll substitute Josh in there as well since I'm reading it.
Hey.
I saw you put out a call for some favorite console launch memories and thought I'd share my personal favorite memory, the launch of the PlayStation 2 in North America, which had its initial shipment cut in half, making the
PS2
super tough.
Right. Because again, they were broken in Japan, like the guy at EB Games said.
Yep. I forgot that it was literally cut in half. That's insane.
The DVD lasers were all messed up, right?
Yes, yes.
And then that happened again on PS3.
Well, and that was a big selling point for that system was, you know, a DVD player early on.
Yeah, watch The Matrix.
Yep, exactly. Continuing with the letter, my best friend and I took the day off from school to go out and camp in front of the local Circuit City.
Hell yes.
Also a sign of the times, which we heard would have around 10 consoles available for launch. Naturally, we got permission from our moms, what with being in high school and all.
Cool moms.
So, yeah, tell me about it. The letter continues. So we went out to Circuit City at around midnight and joined other several eager and much older gamers eager for their consoles. Midnight launch. We still remember the mixture of exhaustion, excitement, and straight up nervousness while we waited for daybreak to come and the store to open up. The entire time, my mom hung out with us.
Cool mom!
Incredibly cool. And even took a trip to Dunkin' Donuts to get us some coffees and donuts. Well, morning came, and long story short, we didn't get our consoles. The Circuit City manager took 2 people he knew from the back of the line. Oh, this is so lame. And brought them up front, thus essentially cutting off my friend and myself from the consoles we camped out for. We were numbers 9 and 10 in line with a confirmed 10 console allotment. What a horrible person that Circuit City manager is. Later that week, still reeling from the disappointment of not getting that PS2, my mom got a call from the local EB Games where the manager had an extra PS2 due to a canceled pre-order. I had gone there earlier in the week, told him my story, and he remembered. Out of the goodness of his heart, he held the console for us, and we went straight to the mall to pick it up. Likewise, my best friend was able to score one 2 weeks later, but needless to say, he spent a lot of time at my place catching up on some Tekken Tag tournament.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite memory despite the roller coaster of emotions, or maybe because of it. My mom was always so supportive, and it's one of my favorite memories of her. She recently passed away. Sorry to hear that, by the way. That's a really sweet story. And the email goes on to say, anywho, I thought I would share. I apologize if it was a jumbled mess of prose. Thank you very much for all the hard work you do on your show. Your enthusiasm for gaming is refreshing and downright contagious. Best regards, Anthony.
It's a good email. That's a really good story. And yeah, like Josh said, very sorry for your loss. I could not even imagine, especially, and thank you for sharing that story afterwards too.
How cool is that though? I mean, like, he has this memory of, you know, like, obviously video games are still important to him, and his mom recognized that and cared about what was important to him and was there at midnight with him getting him donuts and coffee. I mean, obviously a great relationship.
Yeah. I think we all have those like periods where, you know, that might be something that was like normal, but in like my history, I had some just periods where my parents were somewhat abnormal in their enthusiasm for me to get something like the Nintendo 64. And like, that's what they did. They camped out, and I think it was for 12 hours to get me a Nintendo 64 or something like that. Or maybe it was like 4 a.m. and they opened up at 10 or something like that. But nonetheless, like that, like, it's not to say like, yeah, them buying me something is love, but like, that's like to do something because they know how happy that's going to make you, pretty crazy.
Well, and that's different than just walking into a store and buying something that's sitting on the shelf readily available at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, that shows dedication. So very cool.
Do you miss like, we pre-ordered our consoles like on the stream. Like, we don't have to go to a store, even though I am most likely going to drive to my local Target 30 minutes before they open to see if I can get a console. Because, you know, it can be an extra 4 hours of Zelda. So
sure.
Have you ever lined up for a console?
Yes, I have. Never because I didn't already have a pre-order, but because I've been with friends who didn't have pre-orders. And it usually was for consoles I didn't care about. But I just love console launches. You're talking about this. Yeah, like, it's awesome. And I remember the Xbox launch and going with my friend. We were in high school, waiting for it to come out, and people breakdancing outside. And there were always breakdancers at this particular store in Auburn, Alabama, which is kind of funny. I don't know why they would show up. So, yeah, people breakdancing and, you know, just music playing, good vibes. And you could go get Halo, which was the reason that all those people were there.
Yeah, I only lined up for Wii's. That was the only thing I lined up for because, like, I didn't, even though I had worked ever since the minute I turned 14, like, I was down at town hall getting my work permit and so I could go bag groceries and make money. But like, that just didn't line up with a console launch.
Interesting.
The first thing that I had money and like had the desire to go line up for stuff was the Wii, and it was on Black Friday because Wii's were impossible to get the year that they launched. But I was able to get one on Black Friday. Me and my best friend Adam hung outside the GameStop about probably starting at like 3 a.m. and I think they opened up at 9 or 10. And
was it super cold?
It was super
cold. That's
Boston,
right?
Yeah, it was super cold. But I was, we just hung out. We brought magazines. I was listening to One Up Show and like it made it work. And like, the sun comes up, you know, and things get better. So that was really, really cool to be able to get that and get Zelda. And he got one for his parents when we were there. So that was
awesome.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, it's one of the reasons why Adam was like my best friend. Is like he wasn't even going to be getting one. He was just going to come and wait in line with me. And then he ended up like getting a call from his parents like, yeah, if you can get one, you might as well get one for the family and we'll play Wii Sports or something like that.
That's cool. That's cool. And that console ended up being hard to find like on into April and May of the next year.
On into the next Christmas holiday, it was so impossible to find. Like people lined up for them again next Christmas. I know because I was in college at the time, and to literally pay for food, I had to sell my Wii after playing through Zelda. So,
oh, bummer.
Well, you got to eat.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. Other than Mario Galaxy, you weren't missing a ton that year.
No, I was able to come back to Mario Galaxy.
Okay, good.
All right, so let's go into another email. This one coming in from Dayton, superfan. I tweeted this earlier, but wanted to give you a longer version. My favorite memory is when the GameCube launched. I went to Walmart for the midnight launch and chose the black version. Unfortunately, I only had enough money to buy the console, so I had to wait until the next day, Sunday at 11 a.m. I bet he really read the crap out of the manual, to go to Hastings and rent Rogue Squadron. Spending my last $5 on the Rogue Squadron rental was well worth it. That game blew me and my brother's minds as we played it nonstop for the entire time we rented. Flying across the Death Star and doing trench runs for the first time is one of my favorite gaming memories. Did you get a GameCube at launch?
Once again, the same friend did. That was a period. I didn't get any of those consoles when they first came out. The PS2, the Xbox,
didn't have money, or the GameCube. Man. Didn't have
that
the cash.
That was my issue. Yeah, that was my issue. And like I just got in a Dreamcast the year before the PS2, and so my mom didn't really want to shell out for it. But yeah, the GameCube, Luigi's Mansion, and Rogue Squadron. I mean, those two titles alone are just really great games. Rogue Squadron is one of the secret best Star Wars games. People don't talk about it as much as some of the other ones, but I mean, it really holds up nicely. And another thing I want to highlight in this story is he was talking about Hastings. Do you know what Hastings is, Kevin?
Yeah, go Hastings.
Yeah, go Hastings. It used to, well, it is gone now, by the way. It literally did go. The whole chain went under in October of 2016, and we had one in Auburn, Alabama for like 17 years before it went away. And I wrote a eulogy of sorts for it for my local newspaper.
You buy all their used games?
To post to put in the show notes if you don't mind, so Dayton can see that. Dayton might if he has fond memories of the place like I did. It was just such a cool store. It was like where they had a huge rental section as well as a video game section, a DVD section, books and magazines and everything. It was a very large store, like kind of like a small Walmart or Target.
Yeah, if you weren't some rich kid, like the rental stores were incredibly vital to your, you know, ability to play video games. Like for me, it was our local mom and pop popcorn video, which had a game section. That's where I did all my NES stuff. And then Photographics, another mom and pop shop. We didn't really do Blockbuster stuff until like the N64 era, once those other shops kind of shut down. But yeah, like that was... That I mean, yeah. It's not the same as like GameFly, but like it was like, I guess it's like Josh. It's like when we used to rent movies. Like you get to go, you look at the box on the shelf, you turn it around. Yeah. Like you're like, okay, is there a case behind it? Does it mean they have the thing in stock? Like, or you know what I mean? And
yeah.
Then making sure that thing works.
That's part of the experience, though, you know, like actually being able to go rent a game that you just for a console that you just got. And also, he didn't mention this. I wonder if he had a memory card or not. He didn't mention if he got one. And that was, you know, like one of the first, well, I guess PS2 and Saturn as well, you weren't able to save otherwise. But like N64, you could save directly to the cart on most games if you didn't have a memory card. So I could see if you just got a GameCube having to like try to play through Rogue Squadron in its entirety. Because yeah, I don't think there were a ton of memory cards for the GameCube lying around either.
No, but there was a sick super big vent on the side of your GameCube to cool that thing. So you could just leave that on for days.
I did too sometimes.
Let's go to the next question from Ryan.
I felt compelled to write in, even though I've only purchased one console on its launch day. That was the Wii U. I woke up at 4 a.m. and went to my local Target to wait in line. Well, actually, I began the line. I can sense the embarrassment. Anyway, he says, a few more people joined a little bit later, so I didn't feel completely embarrassed being out there early in the morning. It was interesting to talk about hopes for the Wii U with complete strangers. Sadly, the hopes were never realized. I still really like the Wii U, and my younger son plays it a ton. The first-party games are exceptional, and I guess that it is the real motivator for staying with Nintendo. We also have a 360, but nothing comes close to the polish you get with Nintendo games. My first Nintendo console was the NES. We didn't get it on launch or even during its first few years in the States. I was with my parents in 1989 when they purchased the NES Power Set from KB Toys. It was going to be put away for Christmas, so for us, that was the launch day. You know, that's kind of a good point, Kevin, of when you're a kid, launch day is Christmas Day a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah, like that was, I mean, a lot of times, or even for like the Super Nintendo, I saw it once in someone else's house before I got it for Christmas.
Yeah, it's like that's
even though it came out in September.
Right. And so you're, you know, the days before Christmas become like the way that you and I are feeling right now about the Switch. So he goes on to say, we were all so excited, and he's talking about the NES, we were all so excited and it blew away the Atari 2600 we had. I've been a Nintendo fan ever since. I may have contemplated getting a TurboGrafx-16 later, but I'm glad that I saved my money and held out for the SNES.
Missed out on Blazing Lasers, though.
That's a, yeah. It's a toss-up, but I'm going to say he's okay in the end. So he goes on to say, now we are just 4 days away from the launch of the Switch, and I am both excited and apprehensive. I have expectations and hopes, but I know it could all come crashing down around me. I hope that third-party developers get on board and that all of the games we have glimpsed, especially Project Octopath Traveler, will make their way to the system. I have a pre-order, so I won't have to wait in line, which is nice, as long as the store doesn't cancel it all at the last minute. Here's hoping to a great weekend. Thanks for taking the time to read this. Enjoy the podcast, the wealth of knowledge you and your guests bring to it. Keep up the fantastic work. Ryan.
Yeah, that is something that has been somewhat of a problem. I know some people have been getting their Zelda special edition pre-orders canceled. I don't know how widespread the actual Switch hardware cancellations have been, but that's why, like, we even talked about this on the other shows, is we ended up pre-ordering multiple consoles, and, you know, I'll just keep one of them, whichever one shows up first, or if I go to Target and I get that one, what I'll do is I'll return the other two. Like, it's not the end of the world, but that's always, oh, that's soul crushing to know that your console that you pre-ordered is not there.
Yeah, but it's not looking like a PS2 situation or anything like that, though. So hopefully the console makes it at least. But yeah, that Zelda Special Edition situation is terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, Nintendo sucks with Special Editions. There's no excuse, and I don't want to hear any sort of, oh, it's, you know, limited inventory. No, like, there's clearly people that wanted this stuff and that are now mad or going to have to spend hundreds of dollars on eBay because they're incredibly diehard fans. You know what you could do is like open up a pre-order, figure out how many people want, and then make them. Whoa.
Yep. You still can't get an NES Classic.
Stay positive, Kev. You only got a couple days left.
All right. Yeah, you're doing okay.
I got three NES Classic Editions right next to me.
Nice.
Do you have one?
I do have one. Thank you. Okay. Have you done the Phil Theobald hack? I think that's the official name for it now.
I haven't turned mine on in weeks.
Okay. It's a great little piece of kit, though.
I'm going to be giving one away in the show.
Ooh, very good. Details. I think that could coincide nicely with the 100th episode.
That's great, great minds. All right, so let's go to this last email because I got some 360 stuff to talk about. Oh, man, I'm going to just make sure that I know exactly who this is from because I always feel terrible when, you know, like someone sends an email and you don't have their name, but don't worry, I already found it. So this email is coming in from Chad, and Chad says, I don't remember too many console launches. I was always the guy getting a system a year or two after it launched, but the PS3 was a weird situation. I was pumped that the PS3 was coming out, but when I heard how expensive it was going to be, you guys remember, $599, I was extremely disappointed. I took the money I had been saving and bought a 360 for myself a few days before Christmas in 2006, even though I had been a Sony guy for the two previous generations. Chad, you and so many others did that, especially with Gears of War hype. My girlfriend at the time was rather upset. I didn't understand why, but Christmas morning when I opened the PS3 she had bought me, it dawned on me. I was pretty upset that she spent so much on me for Christmas, but it has since come to be a pretty great memory. We're married now, by the way. Games bring us together, guys. Over the years, we both ended up with a PS3 and have since come to own three or four in different rooms for Blu-ray players. That happens. And way more games than we should. The PS3 is still a pretty important machine for us. We still use the PS3 pretty much daily for streaming Netflix and Hulu, even though we have a PS4 now. Oh, and that 360, I took that back after getting the PS3. Keep up the great work with the podcast. That was PS3 relaunch was super weird.
Yeah, Genji, man. You got that Genji action.
It was Genji. It was $599. It was people waiting in lines to flip them on eBay to get, you know, like $2,000, you know, whatever it was, you know, two racks, three racks, whatever it was going to be to, you know, flip those things. And then everybody went to eBay and then they were selling for like $800 instead of $600, which, you know, was significantly less than what the 360 was going for back when that hit its launch. But
yeah. And do you remember that the controller actually didn't even have rumble when the console first came out?
Yeah, I ended up I can't remember. I think, okay, this is, now I'm actually remembering this stuff. So I was firm in the camp of 360. Like, I was so firmly in the 360 camp that, like, I was like, you guys, like, talking to my parents, like, this is all I want. Like, I want an Xbox 360. They're sold out everywhere. It's impossible to get them. And I was able to work something out where, I think I might have told this story before, if I could find, and I used one of those things like Xbox 360 tracker or whatever online to see like when it was back in stock somewhere. And I ended up finding it online in a bundle on CircuitCity.com with Project Gotham Racing 3. I think it was Oddworld. No, that would have been the original Xbox. No, what was it? Project Gotham 3 and maybe an extra controller, I think, was the bundle. And it was like $500 or $520 bucks. So, yeah, I mean, it was like retail price, but you had to buy the $60 game and the $60 controller. So, yeah, it was probably $520. So I was like, oh, my God. I ran upstairs because I was in my parents' basement. I ran upstairs. Oh, it's just in stock. It's in stock. It's in stock. And I get the credit card. I get the Amex. Go downstairs. I buy it. And I'm tracking this thing like it is – like I need a replacement liver or something like that. Like I'm making sure this thing gets to my house and it gets there on Christmas Eve. Like it's going to arrive before Christmas, gets there on Christmas Eve. And for whatever rationale, don't know why, I thought it was totally okay to open up the 360 and play it on Christmas Eve. And my parents were pissed. Like they were pissed. I even ended up bringing it to a Christmas Eve party, like without telling them. Like I didn't, like you can hear the UPS truck coming a little bit. And I'm like, I immediately went to the door so the dogs didn't bark. I got the box. I went in my bedroom, opened it up, and then brought it to the Christmas Eve party. And then they were actually ended up being really cool, but I'm like, oh, fine. Yeah, you know, we'll just pack it up and then you can't play it until the morning. So like literally I was up at 4 a.m. and I reopened the Xbox 360 and played it until everyone else woke up.
Well, and the end of that story is that Kevin's parents then made him go and get another Huffy bike.
Yeah. They made me get an 18-speed this time, which was...
Or a unicycle.
Yeah, but that was like... I was so firmly in the 360 camp. I had drank the Kool-Aid. Peter Moore had promised me the greatest launch lineup of all time. HD gaming and and like I was just $599. The games look like crap. I don't need a Blu-ray player. I don't have an HD TV. And also, I previous generation, I was Xbox. I was Halo. I want Halo 3. I want to be able to play the Microsoft family of first party and, you know, second party titles of the, you know, of that console. And then I ended up getting a PS3 as a justification because months, 2 months before I finished college, like I'm going to be a video games journalist. So, you know, I found
You got to have everything.
I need to have everything. I need to have everything. So I somehow found $600. Or no, it was probably, I think it was $399 at that time in 08 and picked up a bundle with MotorStorm and then had to import. I imported a controller from Japan that had DualShock support because that game actually supported it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, a six axis with no rumble. I mean, that was just incredibly lame. Did your surely you had the Red Rings of Death with one of your 360s?
Yeah, I think I went through, I probably went through three or four. Like, I got checks back from Microsoft. Like, I was part of that, like, hey, we messed up. Here's some money.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, which...
And we got, like, a free game, too, didn't we? I got, like, a copy of something. Oh, no.
I don't recall. I don't recall how they did that.
You know what it was? It was, since I worked at GameStop in college, we had this Microsoft, like, in, retail rewards program where if you worked at GameStop, you could just go on this special retail website for, you know, GameStop employees... go on this Microsoft panel and then answer surveys and answer like they would make you watch a 5 minute clip of an upcoming game. And then you just have to answer questions on it. So you were, you had enough knowledge on the game in case someone came into the store and wanted to ask you questions about it. So
yeah,
like I'd hang out for an afternoon in my apartment and I would answer a bunch of these and you would build up a bunch of reward points. And you like, I ordered so many, I got so many free games through that I would then, and you know, maybe this is somewhat immoral, but I would take them to the local Walmart because they didn't require a receipt. So I would return them at Walmart and I'd buy food with them because I got to eat, as I mentioned before.
No, I think that's just smart.
I'm sure they sold them and you know, Walmart's still around.
Yeah, no, yeah, they didn't go under. Trust me. Some of the things that Walmart has done to its employees over the years, they had this coming, Kevin.
I know that's what I was doing. I was trying to stick it to Walmart,
sticking it to the Waltons,
Mr.
The family,
yeah, and Sam. Yeah.
So, what's your all-time favorite launch then, Kevin? Like we've both kind of gone back and forth and said, you know, we both kind of alluded to ones that we loved a lot. You were just kind of you were talking pretty positively about the Xbox 360 a minute ago.
Yeah, it was the Xbox 360. It was Xbox Live. It was it was because I was watching. That was when I discovered 1UP. I was watching the 1UP show and
yeah,
like they praised the crap out of that stuff. So I was totally bought in and. Like I was ready for the next generation of games. I wanted Halo 3. I was on board. But the best console that I like, the best day, like the console that I got, the best first day with a console was probably like it's hard to beat. It's really hard to beat the N64 and the Dreamcast. Like
yep.
Like N64, I got it with Super Mario 64, Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey, two top-tier games on equal level with each other, and then also Star Wars Shadows of the Empire the next day for $120.
Yeah, some of those cartridge prices were insane point in time.
Funko Land inflated them because of demand, and they could do that because they're pieces of shit.
Yeah, that's
sorry,
crummy.
Funko Land.
I think the manufacturer suggested retail price on some of the third-party N64 games was like $80, though.
Yeah, $70-$80 for third-party stuff. First-party stuff was $50.
Right. What color controller for the N64?
I had, obviously, gray that came packed in, and I got a red one.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it was blue. So we went to Toys R Us, and the N64 is still my all-time favorite launch, just sentimental value. And Super Mario 64 is one of my two or three favorite games ever made still to this day.
Did you get the VHS? Did you get the VHS from Nintendo Power that showed you what that game was? And like that 10-minute VHS was played 100 times before I got my N64. 100 times.
Yes. Yes. No, I mean, they had me salivating for it. I mean, I was following it when it was the Ultra 64 before they named it the N64 formally.
Arcade quality graphics.
Yeah, it was actually called Project Reality for a while, yeah. Kevin. I mean, like, even beyond arcade quality, like,
Jurassic
this is
Park
real life.
Quality.
Yeah, so this, not so much.
These
not
are the
so
chips.
Much.
It's silicone graphics, the same stuff they used for Jurassic Park.
I think it wasn't that kind of the last time that Nintendo really, like, woofed that much, like, actually, like, talked the talk that much about graphics? Or did they do it with the GameCube? Do you remember?
No, GameCube was very much, like, graphical showcase, and there are a couple titles on that console that are, they deserve that sort of label.
Sure. Oh, totally. But
even Luigi's Mansion at launch.
Yeah. And that game looks pretty good now and certainly was doing things that most other games weren't doing. It had the cool transparent effects with the ghost and the bright colors. But I don't know. It's hard to explain. The N64 launch also felt like the beginning of a new era. Like, just because of the 3D polygonal graphics, yes, they were on the PlayStation, but just, like, with that analog stick and playing Super Mario 64 for the first time and realizing that it's directly correlating with how hard you're pushing the stick and you can make Mario crawl or run just by pressing that thing, like, it just felt like gaming was being reinvented. So that was the most special one to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, and it's stuff that I don't remember as much, but I got a Game Boy Color very, like, within the weeks of launch of that.
Nice. And that was a pretty old hardware at that point in time. I mean, yes, it was the color screen for the first time, but the Game Boy itself as a brand and as technology had been around for, like, 7 years or so when the color revision came out.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was interesting that they still had that level of excitement for it.
35 hours of battery life.
Really?
Game Boy Color. 35 hours. Sheesh. Now we're down to 2.
Yeah. I know he was double A's, you know, which was kind of nice as well.
Well, I think that is probably where we'll leave things since it's almost 10 p.m. And it's my bedtime and Josh needs to go home. So we're going to wrap things up here, but you know what, I'll probably end up having this out on Thursday night, so you guys have something to bring with you if you're going to go line up, and hopefully you do get your Switch, you get your carrying case, you got your overpriced Joy-Cons, your equally overpriced Pro Controller, and as we mentioned before, hopefully Nintendo has upgraded from their free 50 hours of AOL dial-up for their servers and have expanded to some sort of, you know, maybe DSL, maybe ISDNs, probably most likely. So we can get like a fat 128 kbps to those servers, and that way we can. I know Zelda's gonna have a day one launch. We know we have a required update for the console at launch. And if I'm sitting here, not able to play Zelda on day one, I am going to make my connection in Redmond, Washington. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my Nintendo Switch. I'm going to shine it up real nice, turn it sideways, and stick it straight up Mario's ass. Because this is unacceptable if it happens. I didn't care about the Wii U launch. Rough launch. Not nothing to play on that thing. This has a game I want to play.
Well, actually, I think that Zelda has been confirmed, at least the cart version, to not require anything. You just put it in and play it. Like, there's no patch or anything. So you should be good to go, actually.
All right. Well, we'll see.
But, I mean, I'm just trying to save Mario from what you just described.
We'll see. You know, we're putting a lot of faith in them, and especially with a worldwide launch. This is going to be... It's going to be a mess. Before we do...
One last thing, Kevin. One last thing I just wanted to say. You know, reading these stories and thinking about, like, the things that we remember about these launches and the reason that this stuff is important is just kind of the shared community aspect of it. And like, if you have somebody with you or if you don't, I mean, just like tweeting and talking about it and sending in emails and stuff. So just make this launch a memorable one, you know, let's have fun.
Yeah. And I, this was a really cool format for an episode, and I definitely would like to do some more stuff like this in the future as a perfect highlight of why video games are so cool and why we enjoy them so much. And, some people don't appreciate nostalgia as much as others. I really do, for better or worse. I like to look back on the past and remember how much fun, you know, we had back then, and to, you know, make sure we're still having as much fun now. Don't be playing a game that's really like you're 20 hours in and you hate it. Don't do that. There's play Yakuza Zero. Do that. That's way better.
Yeah. Good call.
But before we do go, Josh, what do you got coming up? What should people keep an eye out for in terms of your stuff?
Yeah, Digital Rights. It's actually in kind of a weird spot at the moment, kind of a weird time for the podcast, but I'm reloading with a bunch of guests. So you'll see me get more regular with that coming up. And you can get that on iTunes or Overcast or Downcast, whichever one it is.
Import the RSS feed podcasts from Libsyn.
Yeah, just go straight to Libsyn, tell them you want it, and you'll get the podcast somehow. But yeah, lots of good stuff there. JoshuaHillier.com if you just want to see things that I've written, and keep in touch.
Also, if you want to give me a job, if you want to, you know, me to work for you and you're doing
me?
Cool stuff. No, not you.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you can afford me, man. I run exclusively on sealed, clear, blue and green VMUs. Like, it's in my contract, so I can't do anything about that. Hard to get, you know, once this, you know, once things go bad, what do you think we're going to be using for currency? It's not going to be that paper money that's fragile. We're going to be using VMUs without working batteries in them. And make sure those batteries work. It's going to be important. So we're going to transfer the launch codes is connecting two VMUs together.
I think a can of like Sloppy Joe meat is probably what, like two VMUs in the post-apocalyptic currency?
No, it's two VMUs, and it's a copy of Resident Evil Code Veronica.
Oh, yeah. Those are actually kind of easy to find, so I can swing that.
All right. Well, we'll see if we can start the stocking up. And again, I hope you guys have a great Switch launch. And until next time, I hope you can go and check out At Back of My Play on Twitter, at Kevin Larrabee, at Joshua Hillier. And I will be going to Tokyo in a couple days. I will be doing a lot of filming. I'm going to be recording a couple podcasts out there. If there's anything that you want me to do /film/ you want to know about in regards to Japan, let me know, and I will do my best to facilitate your needs. I'm literally going to be bringing a GoPro on the plane, playing Zelda, bringing it with me, going to get curry, going to the convenience stores, going to these game shops, going to A4 Play, talking about Zelda 2, doing lots of fun stuff. So get at me, because once I'm there, once I'm doing stuff, I can't promise I can make any of that stuff happen. So thank you so much. And to Patreon supporters, you got some extra stuff coming to you, so don't leave just yet. You get an extra 20 minutes coming up of awesome retro talk where we talked about a bunch of cool stuff. I promise it's worth sticking around. And thank you so much to the Patreon supporters at patreon.com/backofmyplay. Your support means more now than ever, now that I don't have a job. I'm literally, you're listening to this, I'm probably just going to be playing Zelda and covered in the remnants of pretzels with peanut butter inside it. It's going to be gross. I need help. I need all the help I can get. So again, thank you for tuning in to this episode of Back of My Play. We'll see you next week with a brand new show. And thank you, Josh, for coming on and helping share not only your memories, but the memories of our listeners.
Glad to do it. Love Back in My Play. Best fans in the world. Thank you. Thank you.